Okay, so we're pretty much fresh from Sam explaining the entire lore and plot of the Avatar movies with the blue people to me. And now, I guess as a, not as a sequel, but as a reverse of that, I'm going to be explaining Avatar: The Last Airbender, the show, the animated show, to her. So I'm pretty excited for that. Do you know anything going in?
I know the meme, like everything was perfect until the Fire Nation attacked
Oh,
or something
yeah.
like that.
That's a meme.
Well, I don't know if it's meme, but I keep hearing it. And then I also know that there's this little boy named Aang, and he's bald and he has a blue arrow on his head.
Yes.
And I know that, what else do I know? Oh, I know that there's a Zuko redemption arc. I know that Katara is really cool and that Sokka is kind of dumb.
Yes, that's quite a lot. That sums up a lot of the show. But
Oh,
the actual lore behind it, which I cannot like ever fully cover because that would take too long. I'm gonna be trying to do a bit of that, but that is like it is quite sad. I guess once again, in parallel to the Avatar movies, there's a lot of detailed explanations and it kind of does resemble like actual history. And it reminds me a lot of what we learned in history class as well, like with the Japanese invasion, and we're gonna learn more about that. But yeah, so I'm gonna start off with kind of explaining the time period, and so what leads to the first episode, because like the very first episode we're introduced to the characters, but before that there's a lot that happens that we don't ever actually see. It's explained throughout the series, but I'm gonna be kind of putting it into chronological order for you. And so one main thing I need to tell you is that the way time works in this world, like you know how we have AC and BC, they use BG and AG. That stands for before the genocide and after the genocide
Of who?
of the Air Nomads. And the Air Nomads, that's basically like the what Aang belonged to when he was born. Yeah, like I'm telling you, this is very sad and there's a lot of history behind it. So basically that's how the timelines are split up, okay? And so before all that happens, we have a timeline before the avatars existed. So avatars, they didn't always exist. And before them, the world, there was a spirit world and a human world, okay? And so the boundary between them, it was broken down, and so that led to the worlds intermixing. And you can see how that's dangerous.
Wait, so are these spirits in like when people die and they become spirits?
No, they're like kind of coexisting. Like spirits exist and
Oh,
the humans exist.
okay.
Yeah, and so that there's all kinds of spirits, so it's a bit dangerous as well. But anyways, now that the boundary is broken, they can like, they're all very direct with each other. And so they share the same world. And lion turtles were the only source of protection for the humans. So this is kind of where the elements come in. Each lion turtle, they had their own power ability. So like, for example, fire, earth, water, air. Those were the four elements. And so they could temporarily grant these powers to humans. But the humans, they had to give it back after a while. And so that was kind of their system that they set up. But eventually, there was a guy named Wan, Wan, and he's going to become the first Avatar.
Whoa.
So basically, he was a human. He lived in poverty, and he rebelled against the city leaders. So he gained firebending as a result of his like temporarily being granted the firebending, right? And because of his rebellion, he was banished, so he was exiled. And in this time of exile, he worked with the spirits to get better at his firebending power.
Oh.
And then he unintentionally freed Watu, which was a spirit, and I think it was the spirit of darkness. I could be wrong about that, but yeah. And so this threw the world into even greater chaos because the boundary between the worlds was already broken, but now that the spirit has been freed, it's even more chaotic. And so Wan worked with Rava to master all four elements. So that is basically what the job of an avatar is, to master all four elements rather than just one of them. And eventually they were able to seal Batu in a tree.
Like a special tree?
Yeah. And so the tree was in the spirit world. So Batu, his spirit was basically sealed away there. And as a result, they were able to close the spirit portals and separate the human and spirit world once again. So now there was no longer this intermingling between them.
So is there no more magic in the world?
There's still magic, the but it's just not spirits amongst them.
So then how do they do magic?
That's a good question. Well, for Wan, the first avatar, since he already mastered the four elements, he, had this power because the turtles granted it to him. So, and I think... I actually don't know where the powers come from.
That's okay.
That's a good question. But, yeah, although he wasn't able to, achieve full blasting peace, this kind of... He fused with Rava, his... the person who helped him master the four elements. And so that established the avatar cycle. And basically the way that this works is Rava's spirit would reincarnate every time. So even if an avatar dies, that spirit carries through to the next avatar.
Wait, what do you mean reincarnate?
Basically, each avatar has a period of time where they're alive, right? And so, for example, Wan, he was the first one. But when he dies, the avatar is reincarnated.
What do you mean the avatar is reincarnated?
A new avatar is born, and the spirit of Rava is carried through.
So Rava is in the avatar?
Kind of. It's all the past knowledge of the avatars is, you can access it through the avatar state. But the new avatar themselves is a new person.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So that's kind of what I mean by the reincarnation. But this is the first avatar cycle where it's established. And so it's the time after Wan, this is when the lion turtles start retreating. So they're no longer the sole protectors of mankind.
Wait, I have another question. Oh, yeah. What does a lion turtle look like?
I can pull up a picture for you. Like this.
Oh, they don't look very lion-like.
Well, they have these features, you know.
Oh, okay, gotcha. Yeah, oh, they're kind of cool.
Yeah, they are cool. Yeah, but I guess it was time for them to go. So they started retreating. And humanity learned bending from the original bender. So I guess this answers your question, but this is where the four fractions come up. So the dragons taught them fire bending. So that was where the Fire Nation kind of emerged. The badger moles taught earth bending. The sky bison taught earth bending. And the moon was for water bending.
Wait, how did the moon teach?
I think they just learned from it. The tide. You're asking a lot of practical questions here.
I'm sorry, I'm gonna stop.
These are interesting. But so that helped develop the four different factions. And there was the Fire Nation, right? So that was inspired by the Sun Warriors and their bond with dragons. Then there was the Earth Kingdom, and they had a monarchy established.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And Omashu was one of its earliest cities that was established. And then the Air Nomads, that is where Aang belongs. So they had the arrows because they were basically peaceful monks.
What does the arrow supposed to do with them being peaceful?
I think it was a symbol of their peace.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay.
And they lived in temples and they learned from the Sky Bison. And then the Water Tribes, they were actually split into northern and southern groups. So there was the Northern Water Tribe and Southern Water Tribe.
Wow.
I think the there were immigrants from the Southern Water Tribe that established the Northern Water Tribe because they were displaced a lot, and so they established a whole new group, and they were influenced by the moon and tides. So that was where the four different groups emerged. And so after the avatars, the world was completely divided into these four groups. And for a while, they were able to coexist. And that's where I think your, little meme, little excerpt is coming from. But now, we're going to go back to the Air Nomad genocide thing that I was telling you about. So BG and AG. Basically, at 0G, this is where, everything starts. Fire Lord Sozin, he was in the Fire Nation, and he was ruling it at the time. And he was also very close friends with Avatar Roku. So they were like, he was his best man, actually, at his wedding.
How many avatars exist at a time? Like, are there many of them?
No, there's only one at a time.
Oh. Wait, then how is he with the other avatar?
No. The Fire Lord...
Oh, sorry.
He's not an avatar.
Okay, yeah,
he's only a firebender. But anyways, he was very close with Avatar Roku. However, Fire Lord Sozin, he had a lot of, like, ambitions in mind. And can you guess what those ambitions are?
Is it to, like, take over other kingdoms?
Exactly. It's, like, world domination, basically.
Oh!
Yeah, and Roku, he tried his best to, I guess, dissuade him from that. But he wasn't really successful. And so the two grew apart. And Sozin, during this time, he was able to, I guess, gather more and more resources. And so eventually, he used the power from a comet, which would be named Sozin's Comet, to basically catalyze and commit his genocide against the Air Nomads.
Why did he pick the Air Nomads specifically? Like, was it just like one part on like the way? Like, was he planning to get to everyone else too?
That is a very good question. I think overall he wanted the Fire Nation to take over, but I think maybe it was because the Air Nomads were the most peaceful group of them all, so he thought that by targeting them, there would be, like, because they would be the ones trying to keep peace. That's a theory I just developed on the spot, though, so I need to look more into the actual reason. But anyways, this is when the Hundred Year War begins, and so this is a war that he basically starts against all the other nations. And in this time, he's basically trying to, I guess, just take over. And each fire lord after him, they also follow in his footsteps. And so they're all kind of antagonists and trying to continue this war. And Aang, he was one of the new avatars. He was born during around 100 BG. So before this happens, he was born in that time. Yes, and... Wait. Yes. Okay. And so he was raised under Monk Gyatso, and so they lived very peacefully. Aang was very young at this time as well. And so Aang and Appa, however, once...
Wait, who is Appa?
Oh, sorry. Appa is his sky bison.
Oh, okay.
So all the Air Nomads have sky bison. Do you know what one looks like? Have you seen it?
Is it a bison with wings?
Basically, like, it's very cute.
Aww.
Yeah, and it has a little arrow too.
Aww.
Yeah, it reminds me of your whale a bit.
That's really sweet.
Yeah, but basically, he has his own. And so, oh, they have, like, baby Appa too. It's so cute. And so, basically... Once he learns that he kind of needs to go away from the Air Nomads and, you know, start learning all the other elements, and he learns about Fire Lord Sozin's ambitions, because somebody tells him, he gets really scared. So he runs off with Appa, and he runs away from Monk Gyatso. And so, however, they went into the middle of a storm. So while this happens, he kind of gets very terrified, and he enters the Avatar state. That's basically when, like, the past knowledge of all the avatars kind of enters him. And so this traps him and Appa in an iceberg.
Wait, how does that trap him in an iceberg?
I think he just gets, like, very scared, and then he kind of freezes, paralyzes on the spot. And then the avatar state is kind of where he's glowing.
Wait, I have a question.
Yeah.
So in this case, then, is the avatar state, does it just pass from person to person, or do you, like, train for it?
I think, like, you mean being able to enter it?
Yeah, because he said, like, he entered it, but, like, how do you enter it? Like, is it just, like, a moment thing, like, when the time is right?
That's a good question. He was able to, like, in this moment, I think it was because he was very scared, and he needed, I guess, maybe somewhere deep in his unconscious, the avatars before him knew that he needed help, so they, like, he was able to enter it. But later on, he practices, and he is able to control when he has it. Yeah. I think I've gone wrong about when he was born. I don't think he was born in 100 BG, but the moment when he enters this iceberg, that's around the start of the Air Nomad genocide, so that's 0G. So he enters it at this time. And so once he enters the iceberg, he's basically, like, frozen. And he doesn't know how long he's frozen for, but in 99 AG, so 99 years after this genocide takes place, and all the Air Nomads are essentially wiped away. And he didn't know this was going to happen, that, like, all of them would, you know, die. He's still trapped on this iceberg. And so in this period of time, since there's only one Avatar able to, you know, live, no new one could emerge. And the whole world thought that the Avatar was gone. And they lost hope. They lost hope. Because before, the Avatar was, like, such a symbol of peace and importance.
Yeah.
But now that there's none, they thought that there was no more hope left for the world.
That's so sad.
Yeah. And eventually, Aang, he gets, you know, freed from this iceberg when Katara accidentally frees him. She was, Katara, she is basically in the Southern Water Tribe. And so she was practicing her water bending. And then she accidentally, like, stumbled across this iceberg. And then he, you know, wakens up, and he's still, like, he still looks like a kid because he's been frozen in time. And he doesn't know how long it is. He thinks it's been, like, a week, maybe a month at most.
Aww.
But then it turns out he's 100 years old.
That's really sad. It was, like, all his family gone, too?
Yeah, because all the Air Nomads, they died. And he, it's really sad. In the first episode, he starts finding out about what happened because he didn't know about the genocide.
That's so sad.
Yeah, and he lost all his family, and all he had was Appa. Yeah, but it was very sad. And so, Katara and Sokka, who is her brother, also in the Southern Water Tribe, they meet Aang. And then that's where the first season kind of starts off.
Wait, I remember something about this, because I watched, like, the first 10-ish minutes many years ago. Wasn't Sokka, didn't he say something like, oh, like, what, like, girls are so, like, they shouldn't even be, like, used, they should, he said something about girls.
Yeah, he was very sexist in the first season. I think he gets better later on. But, oh, something to note about Sokka, he cannot waterbend at all.
Oh, is that unusual?
Some people have the ability, some people don't.
Oh, is it like 50-50?
I think so. But basically, all he can do, he has his little boomerang.
Okay, cute.
He's trying to, like, train to be a warrior because that's, you know, the only way he can help. But basically, yeah. And Katara, she's trying to learn. But then her mother actually died. Well, her and Sokka's mother died during the era of the, you know, Fire Lord trying to take over the water tribes because they were targeting another tribe. So she died during that time. And yeah, so that basically sums up everything that leads up to the to that point, the first episode. But I also wanted to provide some background for the Fire Nation as well, because Zuko, he's a very important character. And so, basically what we have in the first episode, there's no more Fire Lord, so that era of time is gone. Now there's Fire Lord Ozai. He is Zuko's father. Zuko and Azula. So Azula is the sister of Zuko. And
I remember someone else. Ty Lee.
Yes, she is Azula's friend. But she's also in the Water Nation. Yeah, and so that's kind of the hierarchy, I guess, right now. But a lot of important background for the Fire Nation. Iroh, he is Zuko's uncle and obviously the brother of Fire Lord Ozai. And so he was in a moment of vulnerability when his son dies. So there's a lot that leads up to that. But in that moment of vulnerability, Ozai sees the moment to position himself as a leader on the throne. So he takes this, while his brother is, like, grieving and mourning the loss of his son, he takes the power and he becomes Fire Lord.
Whoa.
Yeah. And so he proposed to their father at the time, Fire Lord Azulon, that Iroh be disinherited.
And was he?
And, well, Azulon, he was kind of enraged by Ozai's ambition because he was, like, you know, kind of betraying his own brother to seize the power and disrespect. And so as a result of his, like, of his being furious with Ozai, he ordered that Zuko die because he was his son. And so he wanted him to sacrifice his firstborn son. But Zuko's mother would not have that. Her name was Ursa, and so she conspired with Ozai to poison Azulon, so they're his father. And so the plot succeeded, But Ursa was banished as a consequence. So Zuko's mother was basically put in exile. And so with Ezulon's death, Ozai, he was obviously able to seize the throne and become the Fire Lord. And this allowed him to, like, gain a lot of the power. But he, like, he was a very cruel person. And so even to his own son, he was very angry with him.
Aww.
So Zuko, he blamed him a lot. And so he faced his father's wrath. After speaking out of turn in, like, one of the war council meetings, when he was really young, he basically permanently scarred Zuko. And that's where he gets the...
Oh, is that why he has the burn?
Yeah, that's where he gets it. He, like, burns him with his own fire.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, it's very terrible. And so, he says that he needs to be, like... He's also banished. He's basically a banished prince, Zuko. And so... He says that the only way he can come back to the Fire Nation is if he captures the Avatar. Because he knows at this point that the Avatar, even though everybody thinks it's gone, he knows it's still alive somewhere. And so he tells Zuko that the only way, like, you can basically come back is if you manage to find this impossible-to-find Avatar.
Wow.
And since Uncle Iroh, he's such a great person, he comes along with Zuko because he cares about him.
Aww.
Yeah, and he becomes his father figure.
That's really sweet.
Yeah. And so, Iroh is now, like, a disgraced general. And he's, like, both Iroh and Zuko don't have much respect in terms of the Fire Nation. Anyways, that's, like, a lot of the cultural background. And what I thought was interesting about this was that there was also, like, a lot of, like, cultural influences for the show. Because, like, obviously the art style itself, it was kind of inspired by Japanese animation. The creators themselves said that they were a lot inspired by Spirited Away, the show. And so, like, you can see that in a lot of the martial art animation styles, too. That's really cool.
Yeah? You should finish your thing.
I would say, like, just a lot of the bending moves. And it's very cool to see all that.
Yeah. Is Spirited Away the thing with, like, Robert Pattinson? He voiced something?
It could be. It has, like, I think this little girl on the cover. I could be wrong. But, yeah. They were very influenced by, like, many different contexts. And the Fire Nation themselves, like, and, like, all of that nation, they were mostly inspired by, I think, Japan and how they were, you know, conquesting a lot outside and trying to take over China. And the Earth Nation, they kind of were the most influenced by China. So, like, a lot of the food, the clothing, that was influenced by it. And also, like, the monarchy, too. And finally, there was the water tribe. They were mostly influenced by, like, Arctic culture. So, a lot of indigenous tribes. And throughout the show, the Avatar itself, I think that took a lot of inspiration from Buddhism and Hinduism. Because, like, the four elements, the, like, that was a very important thing. And also, like, as Aang goes on his journey throughout the show, he learns a lot more about the rules about the Avatar and, like, how it came to be. So I think that was inspired a lot by different aspects of the religion. So
that's really interesting to learn about.
Yeah, they took so many different inspirations and they put it into this great show. So
I'm really seeing the similarities to Blue Avatar with, like, the comparison to, like, indigenous Native Americans and stuff like that.
Yeah, and how they were, like, you know, displaced from their original homes and, you know, it was very difficult times. Like, all the flashback scenes to the Fire Nation trying to take over, it was very, very scary. But, yeah, they had a lot of these great cultural influences. Also, I think, have you heard the concept of yin and yang? That was, like, very, like, that influenced the show a lot, too. When they went to their northern nation, like, in the season one, they were trying to go there, they brought that up a lot. And so at one point, in one episode it kind of like emerges, and we see that there needs to be balance between them. Like, it can't be one or the other.
Okay.
Anyways, that was a lot of the lore behind it, so that took up quite a bit of time. But I'm going to be talking about the first season, where
okay.
we start off with Aang being reawoken in that iceberg. And so this obviously introduces us to the world where it's very out of balance. And Fire Lord Ozai, he's been waging war in this, like, 100-year war against the nations. And the Air Nomads at this point, they've been completely wiped out, so they no longer exist. And the Southern Water Tribe, it's also in the decline. So that's why Katara, she has the waterbending power, but she's been warned against it because the Fire Nation sees anybody who bends as, like, a threat.
Are there a lot of benders?
I think in the Water Nation... I forgot to say this. The Water Nation, they targeted all the benders. So that's why their mother died. And they didn't know Katara was a bender, too.
So she was one of the last ones.
Yeah. Well, she was a very young kid at the time. They didn't really think to check, I think. But she's, like, one of the only ones left.
This is all so sad.
But the Northern Water Tribe has a lot more benders. And, so that's why I forgot to say, but it's very rare to have waterbending abilities at this point in the Southern Water Tribe. So it's really only Katara that has it. And that's why she was, like, she had to go hide away and practice it. And that's when she meets Aang in his iceberg state. And so it starts off with Katara and Sokka discovering Aang. And Aang, he's, like, unaware of the war that's been going on. He's obviously just a kid at this point, too, right? Because he, even though he's 100 years old, he's still in that same mentality. And so he's, like, the really only remaining hope to save the world from the Fire Nation. And so Katara, and she wants to, like, help Aang as much as possible. And Sokka, he's a bit reluctant at first. And eventually, the three set out on this kind of mission to help Aang master all four elements. That's basically the premise of the show. The first season, it's water. So can you guess what he's gonna try to do in the first season?
Water.
Yeah, he's gonna try to, like, master water. Because right now, his airbending, that's, like, already been developed. But water is now the next goal. And since he already knows Katara is a waterbender, she is trying to teach him along the way. But remember how I said the Northern Water Tribe has a lot more benders? They're going to try to reach there.
Oh.
Yeah, so basically since Appa can fly them, they basically, like, hop onto Appa and they fly away. But before that happens, in the very first episode, we see that Zuko and his uncle in this little fire ship they have, when Aang was awakened from the iceberg, a little blare of light was set up. Because I guess the Avatar has been awoken. And Zuko, he saw that. And that was the very point where he's like, I'm gonna give up on everything. It's been way too long. And then he sees, and he's like, that's no coincidence. Let's go over there. And so he's coming back to the Southern Water Tribe. And everyone in the Water Tribe, because they have so much, like, trauma from the Fire Nation, they're all very scared and, you know, panicking. And so Aang knows that this is because of him. And so they start, like, interrogating everybody. They arrive there in their ship and they, you know, ask around, where's the Avatar? Have you seen him? Blah, blah, blah. And so a lot of the Water Nation themselves, they don't know about Aang being the Avatar. But Sokka and Katara showed Aang to select family members. And so only they knew about it. And they all want to help Aang escape.
That's nice of them.
Yeah, it's very noble. Ultimately, they decide that Aang does need to leave, and Katara really wants to help Aang in this journey, and she also wants to learn to master waterbending herself, because she doesn't have anyone to teach her. Her grandmother refuses to help. So she wants to go with Aang on this journey. And Sokka, he's obviously very reluctant, but Katara is his sister, so they all go together. And they kind of leap against the ground as well. Like, they secretly take off. And basically that's where the whole show sets off. And some of the key adventures that they kind of had was in Kyoshi Island. This is a very cool one. Where they basically end up going to Kyoshi Island. And Aang meets the Kyoshi warriors. And so they basically try to take on the legacy of Avatar Kyoshi. So she was a very noble person. A lot of change happened during her time. And so there, I guess, this kind of encounter shapes Aang's understanding of, like, the Avatar responsibility, and so he feels the weight that he needs to carry on. And they also didn't know that the Avatar was alive again. So they were all very excited. And in this trip, Sokka also meets one of the Kyoshi warriors. And so they kind of have a little thing. But they don't see each other again for a very long time. Yeah. Another very important moment is in Omoshu. This is when Aang reunites with his old friend, King Bumi. So he's
still alive?
Yeah. The thing is, he doesn't recognize him until later on. King Bumi, he's kind of a crazy old man. He makes Aang go through, like, this trial. And he kind of seems evil at first. And then he's like, he pulls a Rumpelstiltskin on him. And he's like, I'll help you if you guess my name. Oh! And then he does this thing that Aang recognizes. That's my old friend, Bumi, from the Earth Nation. And he's like, is Bumi your name? And he's like, Aang. And then he's like an old man now. And Aang is like a little kid.
That's really funny. That's really cute.
Yeah. But basically, he's like the king of the Earth Nation at that point. And his motto, I guess, at this point is to not really do anything. So, yeah, he kind of meets him along the way. And then another important moment, I guess, is with the spirit world. This is when Aang begins to connect with the spiritual side of being Avatar.
Wait, they get to go to the spirit world?
Yeah, it's very cool. Well, Aang does.
Oh, Aang.
So he, this includes encounters with, like, spirits like Hei Bai and his predecessor, Avatar Roku.
Hei Bai. I've probably said that really wrong.
But yeah, he gets to meet Avatar Roku and he, you know, tells him about the horrible Fire Nation and everything he needs to do because it's now his responsibility. And so it leads to the ultimate moment of Aang arriving in the Northern Water Tribe. And this is where he trains with Master Paku. And here, an interesting thing to note is that Master Paku, he is actually the lover of Katara's grandmother.
Oh!
Yeah. And so he basically takes on, like, fatherly role. But in the Northern Water Tribe, guess who can't practice waterbending? Women.
Oh, no!
Well, they can, but the only thing they can use it for is for healing.
Oh, Sokka must love it there, then.
That is very true. And Katara, she's like, oh, sign me up for the classes with Aang, because he's being taught by Master Paku, right? And to train and attack. And he's like, no, sorry, women don't have a place here. And then she's like, what if I face you off? And so they basically face each other off. And then she ends up, like, holding her own. And she's very strong. And she, you know, with her own self-taught knowledge, she's very great. And even after all that, he still, like, refuses to teach her. So Aang is like, well, if Katara can't be taught here, then neither will I.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah, and so they go off together again. And so they're basically, like, trying to teach each other. However, once they come here, since Zuko is still following along them and trying to trail after them in his little ship, the Fire Nation launches another assault.
It's always them.
Yeah. And so this is led by Admiral Zhao, and he wants to destroy the Moon Spirit to stop waterbending.
Why are they literally so evil?
Yeah. So this is the yin and yang thing. He wants to destroy the Moon Spirit. And so if he does that, then no more waterbending. And so less threat to them. And so Aang, with the help of Princess Yue and the Ocean Spirit, it's a very cool episode. He is able to, like, defeat Zhao's forces. It's very chaotic, that whole thing. And however, this does involve a moment of sacrifice. This is a bit of a spoiler, but basically Yue, she has to give her life to restore the balance. Oh, and Yue also has a thing with Sokka.
With Sokka? Wait, how old is Yue?
They're, like, she's a princess. She's, like, I think they're supposed to be around the same
age. Okay, okay.
Yeah, and so she becomes the new Moon Spirit. And so, the kind of important thing is, like, throughout the show, whenever Sokka sees the moon, he's like, that's Yue.
Oh, that's sweet.
Yeah, but basically that's the very end of the season.
Is he happy that Yue no longer has power? Because, like, you know,
going with power. Sokka gets better.
Okay, I'm sure he does. Like, yes. Character development, right?
I think in the live action show, they don't show him being very sexist.
Oh.
But I think it was a very important character development for him. Because he starts off very woman-hating. And then you know, develops into a better person.
Well, that's good to hear. This is so interesting. I feel like, okay, before, I've heard a lot about this show and I heard a lot of praise for it, but I never, I guess, this is on me. Because it was, like, animated, I was like, wow, it's probably, like, just for kids. Like, I'm not really going to get into this. But the way you've told me all of this, there's so much intricate lore, and clearly I was wrong for just thinking that just because it's animated, it's for kids. Or, like, even if it was for kids, it can't be good.
Yeah, I feel like it has such a deep, like, a deeper meaning beyond it. And if you actually, like, consider what's going on, like, it's a very realistic, well, not realistic because of the magical aspects, but, you know, it kind of depicts the reality of what it was like for, I guess, people at the time living under that oppressive rule. So it's like, you know, as a kid, you don't understand that, but you can kind of appreciate that when you grow up.
That's so interesting. Is Legend of Korra, is it set at the same time as this?
It's after Aang's rule. And a lot of people also hate Korra because they're like, oh, Aang was definitely a stronger avatar than Korra. But actually, an interesting thing about Korra is when she is a very young kid, like, I don't know, 7, 6, 4, she masters all the elements. So she's, like, over there. She's,
oh, my brilliant. Goodness.
Like, you see her, a little scene of her as a baby. She's mastering all the elements. She's doing firebending. She was born into the water tribe, but she can do all elements.
Whoa.
Very well. Yeah, so she's, like, very strong from the get-go.
What do you think of the 2010 Avatar movie?
Oh, I watched that, I think, once, and, oh, I think it was not great. It wasn't very, it did not live up to the expectations that were established by the show.
I've heard lots of hate towards it.
Yeah, it was not great. Live action was a bit better in terms of accuracy. They actually got, indigenous actors for the water tribes, so that was good. And it was a bit more accurate to, like, the ages of the people themselves and everything else. But ultimately, there's nothing better than the live action. I mean, sorry, the animation. Yeah,
nothing's better than the original.
That's just because, like, it's very hard to take all the, you know, fantastical elements of the animation and translate it into, you know, live action.
That makes sense.
Yeah. I hope you can watch the show, even though it's kind of long.
You've actually inspired me. Like, while you were talking, I was like, wow, maybe I should start watching.
You really should. It might be hard to get into it at an older age, but there's, like, very cool episodes.
And I'm excited. And there's only 3 seasons, right? So I feel like you can get through that.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, let's see if I can get through that with my history.
And it's very exciting to see Zuko's redemption, like you mentioned, later on. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk about this with you.
Mm-hmm. I hope we can make it through.
Yeah, that's so passive aggressive. Thanks.
Okay, well, thank you.
Thank you.